studied the ceiling for cobwebs.
Felt what?
She barely kept her voice from breaking.
A kiss to build a dream on? Big, beautiful man?
She thought. He yanked her against his body. Undeterred when she averted her face, he lowered his head and scattered kisses upon the high curves of her breasts, where they pushed against the scooped neckline of her gown.
Stop it!
He raised his head, a snarl darkening his face. Tell me you felt it, too. The moment hovered full of possibilities. It stretched into uncertainty, and, in her fear, was lost.
Me? I was thinking on Adam.
How could a man's eyes change from such burning intensity to such cold, flat orbs in less than an instant? How could such an open face become so shuttered, a noble face become so savage?
The next time you're foolish enough to say that after I touch you, I won't be responsible for my actions, lass.
Adrienne closed her eyes. Hide it. Hide it. Don't let him see how he affects you.
There won't be a next time you touch me.
There will be a next time every day, Adrienne Douglas. You belong to me, and I can only be pushed so far. Adam can be sent away. Everyone can be sent away. Coffee can be sent away. I control everything you want. I can be very good to you if you're willing to try. The only thing I can't negotiate about is Adam. So be willing to try with me, and all I ask is that you forgo Adam and never say his name to me. If you can grant me that wee boon, I will demand naught else but the price for your coffee each morn, and I promise you, I won't make it too high. The kiss was too high, too dangerous in itself.
By what right?
By might. 'Tis simple enough.
Brute force?
Don't bother trying to guilt me. Ask my mother. It doesn't work.
Well, well. No chivalry here, she noted. But all in all, the deal he offered was more reasonable than the myriad alternatives. He could demand all his husbandly prerogatives rather than one small kiss each morning. She could live through it.
A kiss each morning? That's all you seek in return for my not mentioning Adam to you? And I get my coffee every day.
Stay away from Adam. Don't let me find you near him. Don't say his name to me.
For a kiss each morn?
She had to tie this down to the letter of the law.
For a boon each morn?
That's not fair. Just what's a boon?
He laughed.
Who told you life was fair? Who misled you so sorely?
And considering that we are wed, and the alternative to my kind offer is sharing full conjugal privileges, what right have you to squabble over fair?
Well, you could pin it down a little for my peace of mind. Otherwise, I'll wake up dreading things unknown.
His face darkened.
I seek to give her carnal pleasure, and she dreads things unknown.
Bitterly he turned away.
I didn't mean it like that,
she started to say, hating the bitter lines set about his eyes. She had put them there. But for her own safety, she had to keep them there, so she broke off quickly. He didn't hear her anyway. So caught up was he in his dark brood as he stalked away. Much too late, as he faded out of sight around the corner, she recalled her coffee beans forlornly. They were tucked in that pouch he wore around his hips, and he'd relocked the buttery.
A shower.
That was it. What Adrienne wouldn't give for 30 minutes of steam rolling in thick clouds, a rich lather of Aveda soap, shampoos and body oils, and a fluffy white towel to dry off with. She paid careful attention to embellishing the finer nuances of her fantasy shower to keep her mind off him while she located the gardens. She found them behind the castle. One had to cut through the kitchens to get there, or walk all the way around the castle, and all the way around was a long walk.
Well, poke in a little more than your wee nose, I'll say. I'd like to be seeing all of our new lady.
A voice beckoned from within the kitchen. Adrienne stepped in curiously. The kitchen was unlike anything she'd imagined existed this far back in time. It was huge, well-designed, and spotless. The central focus of the room was a massive column fireplace that offered an opening on each side, quadrupling the cooking areas. A stone chimney climbed to a vent at the high ceiling. Upon closer inspection, she realized that the kitchen had been built as a freestanding addition to the castle proper, designed to be airy and well-vented. Windows lined the two perimeter walls, counters of gleaming oak circled the entire area, and the floors were of palest gray quarry stone. No rotting foods here. No rodents or bugs. This kitchen vied with her own kitchen back home in the late 20th century, except it didn't have a dishwasher. Stairs descended to larders. Pantries were cleverly nooked into alcoves, and beyond the open windows sprawled lush gardens. Upon the sills sat tiny jars of herbs and spices.
"You find our kitchen passing fair?"
Adrian nodded, awestruck, and turned her attention to the smiling man. He was tall and tanned, with a lean body and forearms that were heavily corded with muscle, either from wielding a sword or working with his hands. His dark hair and close-cropped beard were both streaked with silver, and when his clear gray eyes met hers, they sparkled with curiosity and welcome.
"The hawk designed it himself, from his travels. Said he'd seen wonders to make life far more pleasant, and use them all to better Dalkeith, I'll say."
The laird of the castle had been in the kitchens?
"He cut the counters and built the cabinets himself. Likes to work with wood, he does. Busies his hands, he says. Though where he finds time is beyond me, I'll say."
The man rolled his eyes and folded his hands behind his head, leaning his chair back into a puddle of sunshine that streamed in the window.
"Name's Tavis, m'lady," he offered. "Pleased to be welcoming you."
"I'm Mad Janet,"
she blurted in response to his kindness.
"Don't know much about Mad, but Lydia's taken a liking to you, and that's one discriminating woman, I'll say."
Adrian took another step into the kitchen. Her eyes swept the room, admiring the simple genius with which it had been designed. Everything tidy and easily accessible.
"Lydia is out back," Tavis encouraged. "She's been expecting you for some time now, I'll say."
He winked at her.
"Don't let these Douglas overwhelm you, my lady. Stubborn, opinionated people they are. But heart's of purest gold. You'll not find another like the Douglas in all of Scotia. Welcome, I'll say, and if you need anything, you've only to come find Tavis of the tannery."
He flexed his strong hands. "I still make the softest hides this side of Ooster. Perhaps on t'other side, too." Pride gleamed in his smile as he shooed her toward the door. Adrian stepped into the sunshine and breathed as deeply as she could. Honeysuckle, a beloved scent from her earliest youth. Buttercups sprawled in golden beauty beneath the windows to her right and left. Lavender on the air, rugosa roses, and another earthy, rich scent she struggled to identify. She heard the tinkling of water spilling into a basin. A fountain? Following the sound, Adrian traipsed the stone walkways through towering bushes of rhododendrons, lush anemones, bluebells, and scattered forget-me-nots. Stone paths shot off in several directions, but the tinkling sound of water drew Adrian unerringly. The Lady Lydia sat upon the ledge of a stone fountain that rose in four tiers, high above her head. A full-sized stone dolphin, poised atop the fountain, caught in mid-leap, spouted water from its open snout.
"Magnificent!"
Adrian breathed, and Lydia turned to greet her with a welcoming smile.
"My son is quite the inventor."
Pride was evident in every gentle line of her face.
"He did this, too?"
Adrian grimaced.
"Most of the unusual aspects of Dalkeith are of my son's making. When he traveled, he sought the most advanced secrets of civilization to bring back to his people."
"When he traveled the world seeking beautiful bedmates,"
Adrian interrupted acerbically, recalling the words of the Comyn maids. Lydia cocked her head, an amused gleam in her eyes.
"Is that what they say? Is that what he did? What say you ask him yourself? But think well on this, Adrian. What would people who didn't know you well say of you?"
"Point taken,"
Adrian conceded, hoping Lydia never discovered her colorful past.
"Mad Janet,"
Lydia observed softly.
"You don't seem a bit mad to me. Why did the Comyn keep you locked in that tower?"
Adrian recited the words he'd pounded into her the day of her wedding.
"I was too beautiful to risk his own men seeing, so he said."
She added her own words without thinking.
"Truth is, I've never felt that way."
Lydia snorted.
Have you never seen a glass?
Of course I have. But I still never felt that way.
Rather like the hawk, I believe,
Lydia remarked.
He told me once that he knew he was good-looking, only because of the way women fussed over him. That if women hadn't made such a hubbub, he would have just considered himself reasonably neat and clean.
Reasonably neat and clean?
Adrian said incredulously.
The man is flawless, from head to toe. He makes David and the Greek gods and Pan seem all out of proportion. He is raw sex in a bottle, uncorked, and somebody should cork it. He's... Ugh! Bah!
Adrian spluttered and stuttered as she belatedly realized her words. Lydia was laughing so hard, tears misted her eyes. When Lydia was able to draw breath, she gave a pleased sigh.
Well, that's a relief. I wasn't sure you weren't immune. He thinks you are. Don't worry. 'Twill be our wee secret, dear Adrian. And do come sit beside me so I can tell you how glad I am that you're here. I'm only sorry I wasn't here to give you a proper welcome when you arrived. From what I've heard, they all botched things quite terribly.
Adrienne found herself wanting to rush headlong into the closest thing to mothering arms she'd ever known. Her hardened heart slipped on treacherously thin ice.
Dare she?
Dare she not? Behind bushes of blood-red rhododendrons, a shadow flinched.
I hate her. Hate her!
Esmeralda's hand trembled as she raised the tube, then steadied it sharply. She would dispatch the enemy and end her torment. She puckered her lips around the mouth of the tube, keeping level the tiny instrument of death. She drew a deep breath and forced a sharp burst of air from tight lips. A tiny dart erupted from the end of the hollow chute, as small as the stinger of a bee. Esmeralda watched as the dart flew home to embed itself in the pale flesh of Adrian's neck. She smiled with satisfaction as Adrian slapped briefly at the wound, as if shooing away an irritating midge. Esmeralda squinted hard. She could see the glistening tail of the dart shine in Adrian's neck as she spoke to Lydia. Done. The deed was done.
"Where is your husband, Lydia?"
Adrian slapped sharply at her neck.
"Midges? Already?"
"We have our share. 'Tis the reason for the nettings upon the beds during this season. A bit of mint seems to keep them away. I stuff some in my pockets and tuck a leaf or two in my bodice."
She offered a few leaves of her own, and Adrian accepted them gratefully.
"As to my husband..."
Her eyes grew dreamy.
"That impossible man left me over 30 years ago. He died right after Hawk was born."
"How?"
Adrian wiped the back of her hand across her forehead. The sun was too hot suddenly.
"'Twas in battle for the king, and in his dying he made a pledge, or so King James said, of 15 years of his son's life in service to the crown, in exchange for the king's protection of Dalkeith. In fact, Shehawk's service ended only recently."
Adrian wrinkled her brow in confusion. Lydia's bright flowers suddenly melted into a dizzying wash of color. Lydia explained patiently,
"Dalkeith is a rich keep. There was no man to protect us when my husband died. I was left with a wee heir of 2 months. Whether my husband actually made the pledge, or James just invented it, I'll never know. I doubt my Douglas would have pledged our son to King James in any manner, but one rarely wins an argument with a king. I wasn't ready to wed again. My grieving for my husband was deep. The king's men protected Dalkeith until I doffed my widow weeds. But James gave us his protection on the condition that the hawk report to Edinburgh on his 18th birthday for 15 years of fealty, as he claimed my husband promised him."
"You don't believe your husband pledged the hawk?"
Adrian asked, her vision growing cloudy. She blinked hard a moment and her vision cleared. Lydia's lovely face grew pensive, and for a long moment it seemed she might not answer the question at all. Adrian could see memories flitting across her brow, some good, some obviously painful.
"My Douglas was the second offer of marriage I received, Adrian."
"And the first?"
Adrian asked, trailing her fingertips in the cool, sweet water of the fountain, and then dabbing a few droplets at her temples.
"King James. Ah,
a man scorned. Decidedly scorned, and not a bit forgiving. King James had set his mind on me and was not to be dissuaded. It was in my 16th summer, and I was at court with your mother, Althea. We both received many offers of marriage that season, and James was one of my most ardent admirers. I didn't take him too seriously. He was, after all, the king. It was only later that I discovered just how serious he was. But it was too late. I had set my mind on the Douglas when I was but a wee lass. And the Douglas, well, let's just say it was short work persuading him.
Her green eyes twinkled with fond remembrances.
So the king hates the hawk, because you turned down his offer of marriage? That seems incredibly childish. He is. James was spoiled since the moment he was born. He was coddled and pampered and pandered to endlessly. By the time he was of age to marry, he had been doted on ceaselessly. He had never heard the word no in his entire life, and had no intention of ever hearing it. He found it simply incomprehensible that a woman would choose to be a mere earl's wife, when she could be queen of all Scotland.
Adrienne thought briefly about the royals in her time, how very much one had sacrificed to be princess, and one day queen. Lydia had made a wise choice when she married for love.
What truly undid him was that he was foolish enough to announce to his court that I was going to be his queen, even after I declined his marriage proposals on several occasions. I wed my Douglas the day following his proclamation, although we didn't know the king had actually gone so far as to announce his intentions publicly until weeks later, when the news finally reached Dalkeith. My husband said we'd made a powerful enemy that day, but I think neither of us knew how truly vengeful he could be. I suspect there are many things about his service to James that Hawk will never speak of. 'Tis rumour James held threats of destroying Dalkeith over his head, unless Hawk obeyed his every whim.
Her voice slipped a confidential notch.
Hawk doesn't know it, but I sought audience with James, myself, shortly after I began to hear tales of his servitude. I begged him to relinquish his claim on my son.
Lydia's eyes clouded.
He laughed, and told me that if I had wed wisely, the hawk would have been the king's son, instead of the king's servant.
Adrienne rubbed her neck and blinked hard. Her vision was blurring alarmingly, and her head was pounding.
"Public humiliation," she said thickly. "Never met the man who took it well." "I believe 'tis also why King James ordered the hawk to wed on his command,"
Lydia continued softly.
"Just another subtle way of prolonging his revenge. I think he felt almost cheated by my husband's death, and I've often wondered what he might have done to us had my husband lived longer. What a bitter man he's become."
Lydia shook her head.
"I'm glad it was you, Adrienne. The king would hate it if he knew how lovely and how very not mad you really are. You are exactly what the hawk needs. No timid lass or simpering addlepate, but a woman with true mettle and depth."
Adrienne flushed with pleasure. The added heat did alarming things to her head.
"You said you wed again. Do you have other children?" she asked,
trying desperately to hold on to the gist of the conversation. The smile returned to Lydia's face.
"Oh, aye. Adrienne and Elise. They're in France with my sister Elizabeth. In her last letter she warned me that Adrienne is becoming an incorrigible rogue, and she's just about given up on civilizing Elise."
Lydia laughed.
"Elise can be a bit high-spirited and unmanageable at times. You would like her."
Adrienne wasn't certain how to take that, so she didn't comment. Besides, she wasn't feeling at all well. Her vision was now double, her stomach a roiling agony, and her mouth felt dry as cotton swabs. She struggled to swallow. She croaked.
"Adrienne!"
Lydia gazed at her with concern.
"Adrienne!"
She placed a hand against the younger woman's forehead.
"You're burning up!"
Adrienne groaned as she pitched forward and collapsed on the cobbled walkway.
"Hawk!"
Lydia screamed. Chapter 9. Poison. Hawk's face was grim and dark. He carefully studied the tiny dart the aged healer had laid upon the cloth.
"Calibron."
The healer combed his fingers through his long white beard and lowered himself into a chair by Adrian's side. Hawk groaned. Calibron was not a gentle poison. A vicious and slow toxin, it would cause lingering pain for days before it ended in death by suffocation, as the toxin slowly paralyzed the body from the outside in. The Hawk knew there was no cure. He'd heard of the toxin during his service to King James. It was rumored to have claimed the lives of many royal siblings. When one sought to remove a future king, one took no chances with a poison that might fail. Hawk dropped his head in his hands and rubbed his sore and bleary eyes furiously. The intensity of the heat from the high flames wasn't helping, but the heat would help her, the healer had said. It might break the fever. Still, she would die.
Take me. Just leave her unharmed,
Hawk wished with all of his heart.
We can ease her pain. There are things I can give her,
the healer said softly.
Who? The Hawk raged, ignoring the old man. Who would wish to do this? Why kill her? What has she done?
The healer flinched and squeezed his eyes shut. In the doorway, Lydia drew a labored breath.
"'Tis Calibron, then?"
"Aye. The skin has blackened around the opening, and those pale green lines streak out from it. 'Tis the deadly bite of Calibron."
"I won't lose her, Hawk,"
Lydia demanded. Hawk raised his head slowly from his hands.
"Mother."
The word was a plea, hopelessness in and of itself. "Mother, make it better." But he knew she couldn't.
"Some say 'tis more humane to end the suffering in the early stages,"
the healer offered very softly, not meeting the Hawk's gaze.
"Enough!"
The Hawk silenced him with a shout.
"If all you can bring is gloom and doom, then get thee gone!"
Pride and indignation stiffened the healer's back.
"My lord!"
"Nay! I'll have none of it. We'll not be killing her. She won't be dying."
"Perhaps the Rome might know of some cure,"
Lydia suggested softly. The healer sniffed disdainfully.
"I assure you, my lady, the Rome know nothing of the sort. If I tell you there is no cure, you may rest assured that none could heal her. That vagrant band of cutthroats, cheats, and light fingers certainly couldn't."
The old healer broke off abruptly at the Hawk's dark look.
"'Tis worth trying,"
the Hawk agreed with Lydia.
"My lord!"
the healer protested vehemently.
"The Rome are no more than shabby illusionists. They are—"
"Camping on my land,"
the Hawk cut him off sternly.
"As they have for over 30 seasons, with my blessing, so guard your tongue well, old man. If you're so certain they know nothing, why should you care if they come?"
The healer sneered.
"I just don't think wild dancing and chanting and nasty-smelling bits of mummified whoosits and watsits would be good for my patient,"
he snapped. The Hawk snorted. It was obvious the healer knew nothing of the truth about the Rome, the proud band of people who'd fled country after country seeking only the freedom to live as they chose. Like so many who dared to fight for what they believed, they were frequently misunderstood and feared. The gypsy tribe that camped at Dalkeith was a tight community of talented and wise people. Although arguably superstitious, the Hawk had found many of their instincts accurate. But this healer, like so many others, was afraid of what was different, and thus condemned it. Ignorance translated into fear, which quickly became persecution. The Hawk leveled a steely glare on the old man and growled,
"Anything that might heal my wife would be good for her. I don't care if it's mummified toad brains, or mummified healer brains, for that matter."
The healer shut his mouth and signed a quick cross. The Hawk rubbed his eyes and sighed. The Rome were as good a chance as any. He quickly bade a guard at the door to dispatch a messenger to the camp.
"I think you're making a big mistake, my lord."
"The only mistake being made in this room is you opening your mouth again," Hawk growled.
The healer rose furiously, his ancient joints popping protest. With pursed lips, he removed a stone jar sealed by wax and a tight stopper from inside his overtunic, close to his body. He placed it on the hearth. then with the audacity and temerity often acquired by those who have survived plague, famine, and war to reach an advanced old age, the healer dared to snip.
"You might choose to use it when your Rome fail, for failed they will,"
before fleeing the room in a flurry of creaking joints and thin, flapping limbs. Hawk shook his head and stared broodingly at the shivering woman on the bed. His wife. His lovely, proud, tempestuous, dying wife. He felt utterly helpless. Lydia crossed the room and pulled her son's head into the comfort of her bosom.
"Hawk, my sweet Hawk,"
she murmured those nonsensical sounds only a mother knows. A long moment passed, then Hawk pulled his head back. If he could offer no comfort to his wife, he would accept no comfort from his mother.
"Tell me again exactly what happened in the gardens." "Come, sweet whore,"
Adam commanded, and Esmeralda came. She was beyond redemption now. Esmeralda knew who Adam Black was, even as she went to him. Her people had always known, and were accordingly cautious, particularly when dealing with this one, for to incite his ire, or merely to become the focus of his attention, could be the cup of death for an entire nation. And although such phenomenal power instilled immense terror in Esmeralda's veins, so too was it an irresistible aphrodisiac. What had brought him here, she wondered. It was her last coherent thought as he began to do those things to her body that turned her inside out. His face was dark with passion above her, gilded in the amber glow of the fire beneath the rowans. The scent of sandalwood and jasmine rose up from the steaming earth around them. It was wee morn when she was finally able to crawl from his forge. Adam templed his fingers and considered his strategy as he watched the woman falter from his tent on weak legs.
"Fool!"
The word came sharply, harsh and condemning. Adam stiffened.
"You called, my king?"
he asked, addressing his unseen master.
"What have you done this time, Adam?"
"I was having my way with a gypsy girl, since you ask. What of it?"
"The beauty lies dying."
"Adrian?"
Adam was startled.
"Nay, not of my hand."
"Well, fix it."
"Truly, my king, I had nothing to do with it."
"I don't care. Fix it. Our queen would be furious should we jeopardize the combat."
"I'll fix it. But who would seek to fell the beauty?"
"It's your game, fool. Run it more tightly. Already the queen asks about you."
"She misses me."
Adam preened a moment. Finvera snorted.
"You may have pleased her in passing, but I am her king."
Adrian was burning, tethered to a stake, like an ancient witch trapped amidst a mountain of blazing timbers while the villagers gazed placidly on.
"Help me,"
she pleaded through parched lips as she convulsed in the billowing smoke. Choking, choking. And then she felt the hideous sensation of 1,000 fire ants scurrying frantically to and fro just beneath the top layer of her skin. She was unaware of the hawk, sponging her brow, bathing her body with cool cloths, and wrapping her in soft woolens. He pushed damp tendrils of hair from her brow and kissed it gently. Stoking the fire, he turned back quickly to discover her thrashing violently against the snug cocoon of blankets the healer had assured him might ease her fever. Desperation engulfed him, more brutal and pounding than the fiercest Highland squall. A primitive groan escaped his lips as the hawk watched her scratch viciously at her flawless skin in a vain attempt to assuage the attack of whatever fierce beastie the fever had conjured to torment her with. She'd scratch herself raw if he didn't stop her. Yet he couldn't bear to bind her hands as the healer had recommended. A vision of her straining against the bonds flickered through his mind's eyes, and he swallowed a bitter howl of impotent fury. How could he wage war against an unseen invader that had no known vulnerability? How could he defeat a poison that had no cure? He paused only a heartbeat before ripping the shirt from his body and kicking off his boots. Clad only in his kilt, he eased onto the bed and wrapped himself around her, drawing her back against him tightly.
"Adrian!"
he cursed harshly as he cradled her in his arms. How could he feel such grief for a virtual stranger? From whence rose this feeling that they were to have had more time? He leaned back against the wall, cradling her between his legs, his arms wrapped tightly around her while she thrashed and shuddered, his chin resting upon her head. Deep in the night, the fever peaked, and she talked and cried silvery tears. She would never know that he kissed them away, one by one. She would never know that he listened with a heavy heart as she cried for a man he deemed not worth crying for, and that he wished with all his might that he had been the first man she'd loved. Ever hard Darrow Garrett, the bastard who'd broken his wife's heart. What kind of self-respecting Scotsman was named Everhard? In the wee hours of dawn, the hawk fingered the smooth ebony of the chess piece Grimm had given him, even as Adrian called for it in her delirium. He studied it, and wondered why this game piece was so important to her, that as she lay dying, she searched desperately for it in the inky corridors of her mind. It was the commotion that woke him, dragging him from a deep and dreamless sleep. Refusing to open his eyes, he felt his surroundings with his senses first. Damn it, she still burned, hotter if possible. His wife of scant days dying in his arms. What had woken him? Was it the Rome finally arrived? "Let me pass!" The smithy's voice thundered from beyond the closed door, loud enough to rattle it. Hawk came fully awake. That man's voice made his body ready for battle. "The hawk will kill you, man!" Grimm scoffed. "He doesn't like you to begin with, and he's not in a good temper." Hawk nodded agreement with Grimm's words, and was glad he'd posted a half-guard outside the Green Lady's room. There was no telling what he might have done if he'd woken to find the arrogant blacksmith peering down at him in his present frame of mind. "Fools! I said I can cure her!" the smithy snapped. Hawk stiffened instantly. "A fool, am I?" Grimm's voice cracked with disbelief. "Nay, a fool is he who thinks there's a cure for such a poison as Calibron!"
"Dare you risk it, Grimm?"
the smithy asked coolly. "Let him pass!" the hawk ordered through the closed door. He heard the sound of swords drawing away with a metallic slash as the guards parted the crossed blades that had been barring the entrance to the Green Lady's room. And then Adam was standing in the doorway, his big frame nearly filling it.
"If you came here thinking to play with me, Adam Black, get thee gone before I spill your blood and watch it run on my floor. 'Twould be a wee distraction, but it would make me feel better."
"Why do you hold her thusly? So close, as if so dear."
Hawk tightened his arms around her.
"She's dying."
"But you scarce know her, man."
"I have no reason for it that makes any sense, but I refuse to lose her."
"She's beautiful," Adam offered.
"I've known many beautiful lasses."
"She's more beautiful than the others?"
"She's more something than the others."
Hawk brushed his cheek gently against her hair.
"Why have you come here?"
"I heard it was Calibron. I can cure her."
"Think not to tempt me with impossibility, smithy. Lure me not to false hope, or you will lie dying beside her."
"Think not to tempt me with impossibilities, Lord Hawk," Adam echoed brightly. "Furthermore, I speak truth about a cure."
Hawk studied the smithy a careful moment.
"Why would you do this, if you can?"
"Totally self-serving, I assure you."
Adam crossed to the bed and sat upon the edge. He extended his hand, then stopped in mid-reach at the look on Hawk's face.
"I can't heal her without touching her, Dread Hawk."
"You mock me."
"I mock everything. Don't take it so personally. Although in your particular case, it is meant rather personally. But in this, I do offer you truth. I have the cure."
Hawk snorted and tightened his arms protectively about his wife.
"How does it come to pass that a simple smithy has such knowledge of an invaluable cure?"
"You waste time asking me questions while the lady lies dying."
"Give it to me then, smithy."
"Oh no, not so easily."
"Now who's wasting time? I want the cure. Give it to me and be gone, if you really have it."
"A boon for a boon,"
Adam said flatly. Hawk had known this was coming. The man wanted his wife.
"You son of a bitch. What do you want?"
Adam grinned puckishly.
"Your wife, I save her, I get her.
Hawk closed his eyes. He should have fired the bastard smithy when he'd had the chance. Where the hell were the Rome, anyway? They should have been at Dalkeith by now. The smithy could heal his wife, or so he said. The Rome may know nothing. And all the smithy wanted in exchange for saving his wife's life was his wife. Every fiber in his body screamed in defiance. Entrust this woman? Bequeath her body and her lush bounty onto another man? Never. Hawk forced his eyes open and stared at the man called Adam. He was to allow this arrogant, beautiful bastard of a smithy to raise his body above his wife's and capture her moans of pleasure in his lips? The smithy's lips were even now curving in a cruel smile as he savored the war that waged within the hawk. Hawk schooled his face to impassive calm. Never betray the real feelings. Never let them see what you're thinking when it hurts the deepest. How well he'd learned that lesson from King James. Yet, still, anything so that she might live. Alas, is not a boon to be granted. I will give her to you if, and only if, she wants you, he said finally. If she died, he would lose her. If she lived, by price of saving her, he would lose her too. But then again, maybe not. Unable to diffuse the rage which he knew must be blazing in his eyes, he closed them again. Done! You will give her to me if she wants me. Remember your words, Lord Hawk. Hawk flinched. When he opened his eyes again, Adam was holding out a hand to his wife's face. Sweat glistened in beads above her lips and on her forehead. The wound upon her neck was pussing green around its blackened mouth. You touch her, Smithy, no more than you must to cure her, the hawk warned.
For now, when she's cured, I touch her all she wants.
She is the key word there. Adam laid his palm against Adrian's cheek, intently studying the wound on her neck.
I need boiling water, compresses and a dozen boiled linens.
Bring me boiling water, compresses and a dozen boiled linens!
The hawk roared at the closed door.
And I need you out of this room.
No. There was no more finality in death than in the hawk's refusal.
You leave, or she dies,
Adam murmured, as if he'd merely said, It's raining, had you noticed? Hawk didn't move a muscle.
Shehawk James Lyon Douglas, have you a choice?
Adam wondered.
You have all my names. How do you know so much about me?
I made it my business to know so much about you.
How do I know you didn't shoot her yourself with some obscure poison that isn't even Calibron but mimics it, and now you're faking a cure, all so you can simply steal my wife?
Absolutely, Adam shrugged.
What?
Hawk snarled. Adam's eyes glittered like hard stones.
You don't know. You must make a choice. Can you save her at this point, Lord Hawk?
I don't think so. What are your options? She's dying from something, that much is plain to see. You think it's Calibron, but you're not certain. Whatever it is killing her. I say I can cure her and ask a boon for it. What choice do you have, really? They say you make hard decisions look easy. They say you're a man who would move a mountain without blinking if he wanted that mountain moved. They say you have an unerring sense of justice, right and wrong, honor and compassion. They say also, Adam grimaced at this, that you are passingly fair between the sheets, or so one woman said, and it offended me in great sum. In fact, they say entirely too much about you for my liking. I came here to hate you, Hawk, but I didn't come here to hate this woman you claim as your wife. Adam and Hawk stared at each other with barely harnessed violence. Adrian cried out sharply and shuddered in Hawk's arms. Her body convulsed, then tensed as if pulled taut on a rack. Hawk swallowed hard.
What choice?
There was no choice, no choice at all.
Cure her,
he muttered through gritted teeth.
You grant my boon?
The smithy asked.
As we agreed, only if she chooses you.
You will place no restrictions upon any time she chooses to spend with me. I am wooing her from this day forth, and you will not caution her from me. She is free to see me as she pleases.
I am wooing her, too. That is the game, Hawk, Adams said softly, and Hawk finally understood. The smithy didn't want his wife handed over freely. He wanted a contest, a battle for her favors. He wanted an open challenge, and intended to win. You will hate it when I take her from you, Dread Hawk, the smithy promised. Close the door when you leave. Chapter 10 How is it possible that a man's world can be turned inside out, before he even has a chance to see it coming and try to stop it, Grim? Hawk had started drinking the moment the door had shut on his wife and the smithy. He was trying with determination to get head-reeling, feet-stumbling, belly-aching drunk, and was not succeeding.
Do you believe he can cure her, Hawk?
Hawk puzzled a moment. Aye, Grim, I do. There's something unnatural about Adam Black, and I mean to find out what it is.
What do you suspect?
I don't know, Grim. I want you to find out everything about the man you can. Talk to everyone on the estate until you get some answers. Where he came from, when he came here, who he's related to, what he does all day. I want to know about every breath he draws, every piss he takes.
Understood, Hawk.
Good. They both turned to stare at the door to the Green Lady's room. It had been hours since the smithy had closed the door. Not a sound had escaped since.
Who would try to kill her, Hawk?
Grim puzzled. Mad Janet was practically a recluse. According to the gossip at Coman Keep, fewer than 5 people ever saw her. How could a lass so far out of circulation offend anyone enough to invite murder? Hawk rubbed his head tiredly. His stomach was churning and the scotch wasn't helping. On sudden impulse, he rolled the bottle away from him, toward Grim.
Don't let me have any more. I need a clear head. I can't think right now.
He's touching her, Grim. He could be bathing her, gazing upon her. I want to kill him.
So do it, when he's done curing her,
Grim said easily.
I can't.
Ah, then I'll do it for you,
Grim said, ever faithful.
Nay, we made a pact.
You made a pact with him?
Grim's eyes flared wide.
Damn it all to hell, man! You never break a pact. Why would you be so foolish to make a pact with a man you can't stand?
He can save my wife.
When did you come to have such feeling for this mad Janet you swore never to take to wife anyway?
Shut up, Grim.
What's the pact, Hawk?
Grim persisted.
He wants Adrian.
You gave him Adrian!
Grim, no more questions. Just find out anything and everything about this man called Adam Black.
Be assured, I will. You are flawless beauty,
the smithy said as his coal-black eyes raked over her nude body twisted in the damp sheets.
Flawless, lawless,
Adrian poo-pooed dreamily. The heat was ebbing slowly.
Decidedly lawless.
He couldn't know. Not possibly.
What do you mean by that?
She struggled to form the words, and wasn't certain she even made a sound.
Just that there must be something criminal about a woman so beautiful,
he replied archly.
Nothing criminal about me,
she demurred distantly.
Oh, beauty, I think there is much criminal about you. There is something just not normal about you, Adam,
she mumbled as she tossed restlessly.
No,
he replied smugly.
There is certainly nothing normal about me. Give me your hand, beauty. I'll show you not normal.
And then there was cool water, frothy ocean upon powder-white sand, whisper of gentle surf rushing over the beach, cool sand beneath her bare toes, no ants, no rack, no fire, just peace in her most favorite haven in the world, the seaside at Maui, where she'd vacationed with her girlfriends. Beautiful, blissful days they'd passed there with fresh-squeezed orange juice and endless summer jogs on the beach, bare feet slapping the edge of the tide. And then the stranger images, scent of jasmine and sandalwood, snowflake sand dotted with fuchsia silk tents and butterflies upon every bough of every limb of every rowan,
an improbable place, and she was lying in the cool sands and healed by tropical lapis waves.
Beauty, my beauty, want me, feel me, hunger for me, and I will slake your need.
Hawk?
Adam's anger was palpable in the air. Adrienne forced her eyes open a slit and gasped. If her body had obeyed, she would have shot straight up in bed, but it didn't obey. It lay flaccid and weak upon the bed, while her temper shot up instead.
Get out of my room!
She yelled. At least her voice hadn't lost its vigor. I was just checking to make sure your forehead cooled. Adam grinned puckishly.
You thick-headed oaf! I don't care why you're in here, just get out!
Finally, her body obeyed a little, and she managed to get her fingers around a tumbler at the bedside. Too weak to throw it, she was at least able to slide it off the table. Glass crashed to the floor and shattered. The sound mollified her slightly.
You were dying. I cured you, Adam reminded.
Thank you. Now get out!
Adam blinked.
That's all? Thank you, now get out?
Don't think I'm so stupid that I don't realize you were touching my breasts,
she whispered fiercely. At the abashed look on his face, she realized he had indeed thought she'd been unconscious.
So that, and my thanks, are all you'll be getting, Smithy,
she growled.
I hate beautiful men. Hate them.
I know. Adam smiled with real pleasure and obeyed her dismissal. Adrienne squeezed her eyes shut tightly, but upon the pink-gray insides of her eyelids, shadows arose. Images of being held between the hawk's rock-hard thighs, wrapped in arms that were bands of steel. His voice murmuring her name over and over, calling her back, commanding her back, demanding that she live. Whispering words of,
what? What had he said?
She lives, Lord Buzzard.
Hawk. Both birds of prey. What difference? A buzzard is a scavenger. A hawk selects his kill as carefully as a falcon, stalks it with the same unerring conviction, and it fails as frequently, which is never.
Never,
Adam mused.
There are no absolutes, Lord Hawk.
In that you're wrong. I choose. I adhere. I pursue. I commit. I attain. That, my errant friend, is an absolute. Adam shook his head and studied the hawk with apparent fascination.
A worthy adversary. The hunt begins. No cheating. No tricks. You may not forbid her from me. And I know that you tried to already.
You will recant your rules.
Hawk inclined his dark head.
She chooses, he allowed tightly. I will forbid her nothing.
Adam nodded, a satisfied nod as he plunged his hands deep in the pockets of his loose trousers and waited.
Well, get thee from my castle, Smithy. You have your place, and it is without my walls.
You might try a thank you.
She lives. I'm not certain you aren't the reason she almost died.
At that, Adam's brow creased thoughtfully.
No, but now that I think on it, I have work to do. I wonder, who would try to kill the beauty, if not me?
And I didn't. Had I, she would be dead. No slow poison for my hand. Quick death. Or not at all.
You're a strange man, Smithy. But I will soon be most familiar to her. Pray the gods she is wiser than that,
Grim mumbled, as Adam stalked off into the dim corridor. Night had fallen, and the castle lamps were still largely unlit. Hawk sighed heavily.
What deal did you make with that devil?
Grim asked, in a voice scarcely audible.
Think you he may be? Something is not natural about that man, and I intend to find out what.
Good. Because he wants my wife, and she doesn't want me. And I saw her wanting him with a hurt in her eyes.
Grim winced.
You are certain you don't want her, just because she doesn't want you and he wants her?
Hawk shook his head slowly.
Grim, I have no words for what she makes me feel.
You always have words.
Not this time. Which warns me truly that I'm in deep trouble, and about to get deeper. Deep as I must to woo that lass.
Think you I've been spelled?
If love can be bottled, or shot from Cupid's bow, my friend. Grim whispered into the breeze that ruffled in Hawk's wake when he entered Adrian's chamber. In the weeks to come, the Hawk would wonder many times why the Rome, whom he trusted and valued, and whom he had thought returned those feelings in kind, had never come to tend his wife during those terrible days. When he spoke to his guard, the man said that he delivered the message. Not only didn't the Rome come, they were conspicuously absent from Dalkeith. They made no trips to the castle to barter their goods. They spent no evenings weaving tales in the great hall before a rapt and dazzled audience. Not one of the Rome approached Dalkeith upon the sea. They kept to their fields, out past the Rowans. That fact nagged at Hawk's mind briefly, but was quickly lost in the thick of more weighty concerns. He promised himself he would resolve his questions with a trip to the gypsy camp once his wife was fully healed, and matters with the strange smithy were resolved. But it was to be some time before he made the trip to the Rome camp, and by that time, things would be vastly changed. Adrienne drifted up from healing slumber to find her husband watching her intently.
"I thought I'd lost you."
The Hawk's face was dark, glistening in the firelight, and it was the first thing she saw when she opened her eyes. It took her several long moments to shake loose the cotton stuffing that had replaced her brain. With wakefulness came defiance. Just looking at that man made her temper rise.
"Can't lose something you don't have. Never had me to begin with, Lord Hawk," she mumbled.
"Yet," he corrected. "I haven't had you yet. At least not in the sense that I will have you. Beneath me, bare, silky skin slippery with my loving, my kisses, my hunger." He traced the pad of his thumb along the curve of her lower lip and smiled.
"Never."
"Never say never. It only makes you feel more foolish when you end up taking it back. I wouldn't want you to feel too foolish, lass."
"Never," she said more firmly. "And I never say never, unless I'm absolutely 100% certain I will never change my mind."
"There are a lot of nevers in there, my heart. Be careful."
"Your heart is a wrinkled prune, and I mean every blasted one of those nevers."
"Mean them as you will, lass. 'Twill only make it that much more pleasurable to break you to my bit."
"I am not a mare to be broken to ride."
"Ah, but there are many similarities, wouldn't you say? You need a strong hand, Adrienne. A confident rider. One not dismayed by your strong will. You need a man who can handle your bucking and enjoy your run. I won't break you to ride. Nay, I will break you to the feel of my hand and mine alone. A mare broken to ride allows many riders. But a wild horse broken to the bit of one hand, she loses none of her fire, yet permits none but her true master to mount her."
"No man has ever been my master, and none ever will. Get that straight in your head, Douglas."
Adrienne gritted her teeth as she struggled to pull herself upright. It was hard trying to hold her ground in a conversation while lying flat on her back, feeling ridiculously weak, looking up at this Goliath of a man.
"And as to mounting me..."
To her chagrin, and the Hawk's vast amusement, she slipped back into healing slumber without completing the thought. Unknown to him, she more than completed it in her dreams. Never, her dreaming within the dream mind seethed, even as she was drawn to the great black charger with fire in his eyes. Chapter 11.
"It's not me someone's trying to kill," Adrienne repeated.
She was buried in mounds of plush pillows and woolen throws, and felt helplessly swallowed by a mountain of feathers. Every time she moved, the dratted bed moved with her. It was wearing her out, like being cocooned in a down straitjacket.
"I want to get up, Hawk, now!"
Too bad her voice didn't come off sounding as firm as she'd intended. It would have. It should have. Except being in a bed while trying to argue with this particular man scattered her thoughts like leaves to a windstorm, into a jumble of passionate images, bronzed skin against pale, ebony eyes and hot kisses.
The hawk smiled, and she had to bite down the overwhelming urge just to smile blankly back, like some dim-witted idiot. He was beautiful when somber, but when he smiled, she was in grave danger of forgetting that he was the enemy, and she must never forget that. So she put a lot of frustration to good use and dredged up an impressive scowl. His smile faded.
"Lass, it's been you both times. When are you going to face the facts? You must be guarded. You'll get used to it. In time, you'll scarce notice them."
He gestured at the dozen brawny men standing outside the Green Lady's room. She shot a withering glance at her elite guard, as he called them. They stood, legs wide, arms folded across their broad chests, implacable, stony faces, and all of them with physiques that would make Atlas consider shrugging half his weight over. Where do they breed these kind of men? The Bonnie and Bra Beefcake Farm? She snorted her disgust.
"What you don't understand is that if you're so busy protecting me, the assassin is going to get whoever they're really after, because it's not me."
"Do they call you Mad Janet because you refuse to accept reality?" he wondered. "Reality is that someone wishes you dead. Reality is that I am only trying to protect you. Reality is that you are my wife, and I will always keep you safe from harm."
He was leaning closer as he spoke, punctuating the phrase, "reality is," with a sharp stab at the air directly in front of her. Adrienne compensated by shrinking deeper into her haven of feathers each time he stabbed.
"It is my duty, my honor, and my pleasure," he continued.
His eyes swept her upturned face and darkened with desire.
"Reality. Ah, reality is that you are exquisitely beautiful, my heart," he said in a voice suddenly roughened.
His voice conjured images of sweet cream blended with fine scotch, tossed over melting ice cubes, smooth and rough at the same time. It unnerved her, flatly shattering what little composure she'd been hugging tightly around her. When he wet his full lower lip with his tongue, her mouth went dry as a desert, and his dark eyes, flecked with gold, were a smoldering promise of endless passion. His eyes that were locked on her lips, and oh, but he was going to kiss her, and she would do anything to prevent that.
"It's time you know the truth." "I am not Mad Janet," she snapped,
saying something, anything, whatever came to mind to keep his lips from claiming hers in that intoxicating pleasure.
"And for the umpteenth time, I am not your blasted heart."
He agreed instantly.
"I didn't think you were.
Mad, I mean. But you are my heart, whether you like it or not. By the by, neither does Lydia. Think you're mad, that is. We both know you're intelligent and capable. Except when it comes to two things, your safety and me. You're completely unreasonable about both of those issues." He shrugged one of his muscled shoulders. "That's why I'm having this wee talk with you, to help you see things more clearly."
"Ooh! Those are the two things you're being so pig-headed about. I'm not in danger, and I don't want you."
He laughed. Damn the man, but he laughed.
"You are in danger. And as to wanting me..."
He moved closer. His weight settling on the down ticks beside her caused her to shift and roll alarmingly, right into his arms. How convenient, she thought sardonically. Now she understood why they'd used all those down ticks in the olden days, and why they'd had so many children.
"You're right. I do want you."
He froze.
"You do?"
"Out of my room," she continued. "Out of my face and out of my life. Don't get in my space. Don't even breathe my air, okay?"
"It's my air, by the by, as Laird and all that. But I could be persuaded to share it with you, sweet wife."
He was smiling.
"And I am not your wife. Or at least not the one you were supposed to get. I'm from the 1990s. That's almost 500 years in the future, in case you can't add. And the Coleman killed his own daughter. How? I don't know. But I have my suspicions, and I haven't got the faintest idea how I ended up in his lap. But he had to marry someone to you. He said I was a godsend. So he used me when I popped in. And that's the long and the short of how I ended up getting stuck with you."
There. It was out. The truth. That should stop him from any further plans of seduction. No matter that if what Lydia had told her was true about King James, she'd just jeopardized the entire Douglas clan. Her words prevented his lips from reaching hers, and that was the most imminent danger she could see. Not even the wrath of vengeful kings seemed quite as threatening. One more beautiful man, one more broken heart. The hawk sat motionless. He studied her a long moment in silence, as if digesting what she'd just said. Then a gentle smile chased the clouds from his eyes.
"Grimm told me you wove outlandish tales. He said you had an epic imagination. Your father told Grimm how you begged to be allowed to be his bard rather than his daughter. Lass, I have nothing against a good tale, and will willingly listen, if you but take my counsel about your safety."
Adrienne blew out a frustrated breath that sent a strand of her silvery blonde hair brushing the hawk's face. He kissed it as it slid gently across his mouth. Flames uncoiled in her belly. She shut her eyes and gathered her composure from the fleeting corners of her soul.
"I will not think about him kissing any part of me," she told herself firmly. "I am not Red Coleman's daughter," she sighed, squeezing her eyes more tightly shut. When was she going to figure out that closing her eyes didn't make anything go away?
She opened her eyes. Oh, dear heaven!